Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This past week, President Joe Biden signed an order that effectively can at least temporarily halt the arrivals of most new arrivals at the southern border. And his action has been criticized by conservatives, activists, and immigration advocates alike. So what now? Well, we're going to ask a leading advocate. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Immigration issues have been among the dominant stories this past week. After all the noise and anger in the recent days, this is probably a good weekend to pause and take stock. And my guest is the perfect person to help with that. Fred Sow is the senior policy counsel for the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. The son of immigrants himself, Fred Sow is a lawyer by training and an expert in several immigration-related matters. In addition to the coalition, he has also worked for, in the past, the American Civil Liberties Union and the Chicago Anti-Hunger Federation. Fred Sow, welcome.
Good to be with you again, Craig.
Well, let me ask the broadest question possible first in the wake of the president's executive order, and that is how the coalition views this.
Yeah, so my organization, the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, is very concerned and critical of President Biden's actions of this past week. We are very concerned that these steps are going to deny many people who fled really desperate situations and are genuinely fearful of being returned to their countries of origin, the opportunity to a fair opportunity to apply for asylum or other forms of humanitarian relief if they are not able to avail themselves of some of the other channels that are available to them. What has been happening of late is that many people will show up at the southern border, and rather than trying to evade detection, they will turn themselves into the Border Patrol and make a claim for asylum, having arrived in the United States. Now, the Border Patrol is supposed to screen them and see whether they have a basic credible claim for asylum, or can make out that claim for persecution. Unfortunately, now with this order, that opportunity is going to be very much constrained for many of these people who would be arriving, and they may be summarily turned back without really having had the chance to make the claim that that they're in danger, and could end up getting sent back to the country with that they're really deathly afraid of returning to.
Yeah, and the I guess the supposition of the order is that then they will go back to where they came from or some other place. But when I've talked to some other people in the community, they've pointed out that a likelihood for a lot of these people, even if they come to the crossover point, is that they're going to try and go another way, and that's where some of the danger is.
Exactly. So, the Biden administration has set up procedures for people to, set up an appointment at a border checkpoint using an app on their smartphones. Unfortunately, the opportunities for that process, which is called CBP-1, those opportunities are really very limited. There are other opportunities to apply back in the home country, but again, those opportunities are really very limited. And basically, once someone has left their country, and in this most recent case, in most cases from Venezuela, they're on their way, and they do not want to go back to a really desperate and, in many cases, dangerous situation back in Venezuela. They are going to try to come in however which way they can, and if they can't go through the normal channels that are available to them, then they will take advantage of other channels that are opening up as available to them. That could be through smuggling, that could be just crossing the Rio Grande River or crossing in the desert in Arizona. If Border Patrol catches them, then even if they have good claims for political persecution and for humanitarian relief, Border Patrol may not listen to them, and it may turn them right back.
Is the fact that almost no one is pleased with this directive, and I should point out that on the conservative side, a number of officials are saying that it's not enough, it's too little, too late. Is that fact that literally everyone, not everyone, but almost everyone has criticized this, is that a sign that President Biden is insensitive about the issues facing the migrants, or a demonstration of how very difficult this issue is to even approach, let alone solve?
Yeah, well, immigration is a very tricky issue, and the situation on the border is a difficult and really heartbreaking matter. We have thousands of people who've made really arduous journeys to the U.S.-Mexico frontier. And again, many of these people come from really desperate situations, and again, are genuinely afraid of being sent back. In many, if not most cases, they've given up everything. They've left their home country, they've given up everything, they've sold their possessions, they've left their families behind in order to, pursue whatever protection may be available to them here in the United States. What we have been arguing for is that, yeah, there really need to be more resources to be able to, screen more of these individuals showing up, more asylum officers, more immigration judges, and, more opportunities to go through legal and orderly processes, not just CBP-1 or these parole programs, but other channels that that people can avail themselves of before making these month-long journeys through the Central American jungles and through the deserts and up to the Rio Grande River or to the other parts of the southern border.
But state and municipal officials along the southern border say they and the nation really can't handle the numbers coming across the Rio Grande and other places, that we just don't have the capacity to absorb this many people. And, we will get into it probably a little bit further down, but that's what's, prompted them to send a lot of these people as soon as they get them off to other places, including Chicago. But is it not a reality that these border areas can't do this?
Well, certainly border communities, whether it's El Paso or Yuma or the Rio Grande Valley, all themselves have very limited resources to be able to handle all of these people who are seeking relief here. I guess my my basic premise here is that many hands make light work. That's, you know, if other communities, other states, other cities are able to step up and, you know, address this in kind of the same way that we address refugee resettlement. It's not all the responsibility of certain communities, particularly those on the border. But if other communities are willing and able to step up and provide some resources, we wouldn't have the kinds of situations that we're seeing right on the border. If the federal government is able to step up and provide resources and provide coordination, not only would we not have the situation, but we also would not have, people like Governor Greg Abbott of Texas, taking it upon himself to send buses to, Chicago or New York or Denver or a number of other places. I realize we'll be getting to that a little bit later.
No, we're
going to be asking about that, but I did want to make that point that the lack of federal coordination or federal resources is providing that opportunity for Governor Abbott and making that space for him.
And as you know, the coalition and others like Mayor Johnson here in Chicago want more federal aid for cities like this that are stepping up to help the new arrivals. But when the political reality is when you're dealing with a divided Congress, that seems unlikely, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it's really difficult to pass anything through Congress these days because, as you said, Craig, precisely because we have divided governments and even a divided Congress. And because of, part of the divisions is also very different ideas and conceptions of even just what's happening at the border. I would like to think that there could be some really basic agreement that yes, we do need more asylum officers. We do need more immigration judges. Immigration court backlogs are years and years long. We're not even seeing adequate personnel to process all of the work permit or other kinds of immigration applications. So we need more resources on that front. And I would hope that would be something that everybody can agree to. Unfortunately, as we've seen a couple of times, this, during the first part of this year, even those kinds of provisions are really being tied up in partisan gridlock. And that's all to the worse for all of us.
And those provisions still are based on the idea that many more of these people are still coming across the border and into the U.S. And, I'm hoping that we can talk about, what kinds of alternatives there might be. But right now, I'm wondering what you would tell cities that are still trying to deal with this, those that are trying to deal with it. And, we can also talk about the ones that aren't.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, again, as I said, many hands make light work. And, Chicago, New York, Denver, Philadelphia, all of these communities to whom Governor Abbott and, is sending buses are basically having to deal with these situations on their own or, with the assistance of their respective states and with very limited funding from the federal government. It can't all fall on Chicago. It can't all fall on New York. Other communities really have to step up, even if it's just providing resources for a couple of families. If we are able to, spread the responsibility, we can provide care for many people who need it and who really have very few resources on their own, at least, to tide them over until they're better able to get on their feet and go through the asylum process or go through other processes that are available to them. But, and then, in the meantime, that will also reduce the...
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The very heavy burden that Chicago and other communities are having to face right now.
You're listening to News Radio 780's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and we're talking about the migrant crisis, essentially in the wake of the executive order that President Joe Biden signed this past week. And my guest is Fred Sow. He is the senior policy counsel for the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. And I do want to talk about the situation at the border, but maybe from the other side of the fence. Since the flow is essentially, it could be essentially stopped now, because the conditions set in the order are that, when things are this high, they can cut everything off. What can or should the U.S. do about those people? And I will point out that earlier this week, I spoke with Congresswoman Delia Ramirez, and I'm sure she's not alone in this feeling, that the administration should try to work with an existing alliance of nations so that maybe some of the other nations who were along the way from Venezuela and other places, nations like Panama, can help lighten the load. Is that a realistic thought?
Mm-hmm. Well, I should note here that quite a number of the people who, specifically talking about Venezuelans, many of them are not coming directly to the United States. They have lived in other countries, in Peru and Colombia, and then, for whatever reason, they may have had a tougher go of it in those countries, and they're seeking other opportunities or better safety elsewhere. It would be great if other countries could also, along the way, were able to, to provide for these people who are making these journeys. Quite a number of them are. That said, there are still going to be a number of people, for whatever reason, who are still going to try to make it to the United States. They may have family here. They may have community here. They may, they may have some other networks here, and they will try to come in. Again, understanding that they would be seeking some form of humanitarian relief because of the danger that would face them if they were to return home. So that may be a workable solution. As I mentioned earlier, Craig, CBP-1, the process for applying for appointments at a border port of entry or checkpoint, that system is itself very limited. There are only so many appointments available on any given day. There are also parole programs for not just Venezuelans, but also Cubans and Haitians and Nicaraguans. Those programs are also up and running, but they have provided a good solution, at least for some people from some of those countries. But that said, only so many spots are available in that program as well. So, expanding those programs, expanding the parole program, expanding the CBP-1 program, providing other potential avenues would really be the way to address this. Because again, once people leave, you're not realistically going to stop them. They're going to try to find some way to seek protection here.
Is there any thing that I don't know that the U.S. can do, but that anyone can do to address the forces that are, in some cases, really forcing people to flee their countries. I mean, it's not, it's sometimes it is cartels who are, you know, in crime, but sometimes it's just economic problems, you know, at the other end.
Yeah, I mentioned a couple of the countries that have parole programs. I mean, Haiti, you know, the situation in Haiti is really desperate. There's no functioning government. They're still recovering from, you know, massive earthquakes and, you know, hurricanes and other natural disasters. Some form of coordinated, relief and assistance is really going to be necessary. But unfortunately, the situation on the ground, at least my understanding is that it's really, really dangerous because of essentially who's in charge these days, which is criminal gangs. Venezuela is, you know, another kind of unfortunate situation because, you know, the government of Venezuela has been and the economy have really been crippled by international sanctions going back to the days of Hugo Chavez. And so it's little wonder that, you know, many people may feel afraid of the Maduro government or may otherwise not be able to pursue their livelihoods or make a decent living or support their families. In many cases, it's a combination of both. So it's a little wonder that people are fleeing Venezuela and seeking safety and seeking opportunities in other countries. And again, you know, this has been in the making for several years now, and, you know, the U.S. is kind of the last destination after people have, you know, exhausted their opportunities in other countries along the way.
New arrivals are still arriving in the city and others, though at least now they get dropped off in the suburbs because of the restrictions that the cities have put on buses. I just spoke with the mayor of Aurora, who they put in, if you thought the Chicago restrictions on buses were something, the ones that Aurora put in were even more stringent, that any buses that were dropped off, they said, would be seized. So no buses are being dropped off there. Aside from the very issue that only Chicago and a couple of other suburbs are taking these, taking people in, what are the things that the local governments can do realistically, especially when their budgets are themselves often strained?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question, and one that we are dealing with, and many other parties and not-for-profits are also dealing with as well. I should note here that my organization has been coordinating the case management at the Chicago shelters, and even before then, when the state was operating hotels, when the people coming up from the border were initially arriving, we were also providing that coordinated case management for the people in the hotels. Shelter is still definitely a need, I know that there have been certain issues at certain shelters, particularly with respect to the conditions. We need to make sure that the conditions in those shelters are, you know, remain humane and remain safe, and that's, you know, any potential crises or health public health related issues are addressed, adequately. All that said, to their credit, the city and the state and some not-for-profits have been coordinating assistance those people who are eligible for work permits to put in applications. So that is one of the more important steps in being able to start working legally, make money for rent, get out of the shelters and get on the pathway toward self-sufficiency and getting on their feet, while their cases are pending. So that is one positive step that's been happening. Again, unfortunately, due to the budget constraints that you mentioned, the available resources are, not being expanded; they're being curtailed. This is the case with rental assistance. It's even the case with shelter stays. The city is now enforcing 60-day limits on stays in the shelters, fortunately, the city is providing the opportunity for people to re-enter the system if they still have no place to go. But
so it's recycling the problem, essentially.
That's you can look at it that way. Yeah. We have a problem in this community with shelter space and more generally with affordable housing. And we also have, unfortunately the situation that quite a number of the people who have been arriving here are not eligible for permits. So they're kind of stuck. It seems like, every day when I'm downtown or on the train, I will see somebody, usually a younger woman with a small child, walking up and down the train or sitting on the street corner selling chocolate. So people want to work, people want to be able to support themselves. It's just that, unfortunately, the way the laws are, that's not really possible, or at least not in a really systemic way.
Has the original logjam on work permits been eased any, so that at least the people who are eligible are able to get them?
Yeah, my understanding is that people are starting to get work permits. I believe that that's still a several month wait after one applies for the work permits to be able to receive it. But things may have gotten somewhat better. One other issue is that you need to be eligible for the work permit to begin with. People who are applying for asylum can only apply for the work permit 5 months into their application pendency. Now, there is another form of relief called temporary protected status, where you can apply for work permits at the same time as you apply. But again, those applications are also backlogged. And so it is still taking some time. But from what I've been hearing, people are starting to get their work permits and starting to be able to work legally and become better able to support themselves.
We don't have much time left, only about a minute or two, but I do want to just touch on, are we seeing any easing of the perception problems that were there before? The perception in some communities that new arrivals, predominantly Latino, were getting resources that mostly African-American neighborhoods have been fighting for over the years. I know there's been a lot of effort to get people to kind of see that there's a common problem that people should be fighting side by side, but are you seeing any relief in that?
That's more than 1 minute answer.
Yeah, I know.
In fairness, though, we have been among the organizations that have fully recognized that, many of our communities, particularly in on the South Side and the West Side, have experienced historical disinvestment and really unfortunate policy changes over the policy decisions, throughout the decades. We also support, efforts to more fully invest in these communities and create economic opportunities. And we fully understand that, people in these communities are really justified in wondering, okay, well, the city's able to pour all this money into shelters, but where's that money been all this time? So, and we, quite frankly, ask the same question. We do want to work together with, you know, leaders in, you know, all throughout the city, you know, to be able to address, you know, the economic disparities and the historic disinvestment that we've seen, you know, that unfortunately we've seen in many parts of the city throughout the years.
That is Fred Sow. He is the Senior Policy Counsel for the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. Fred, thank you so much for talking about these difficult and extensive issues with us. And I know we'll be talking again, as we have over the years.
Thank you, Fred.
To our listeners, if you want a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at wbbmnewsradio.com. You can also find our podcasts on odyssey.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening until then. I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.